At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Shadow on the verge of history, the 0-1. Hard hit grounder, left side, off the glove of the diving Perdomo into left. And number 2,000 for Manny Machado in his major league career.
Fitting. A ball off the bat of 109. Perdomo did his best to try to prevent the hit. Unsuccessful. 2,000 for Manny Machado.
Indeed. 2,000. Sounds sweet. Would have been sweeter with a win, though. Padres fall to the D-backs, the Snakes. As Scraby likes to say.
But so nonetheless,
a very special moment for Manny and his family. And he finished with 2001 because he would later homer in that ball game as well. Padres go down, what was it, 6-3?
6-3.
Yeah, 6-3. And so we do it again. We do it again here tonight. Four game series, three more to go tonight. Mr. Merle Kelly on the mound for the D-backs and Nick Pivetta for the Pods. D-backs lineup already out. Padres not. So yeah, there it is. 2,000 was pretty special though. I mean he is Manny's been locked in all season long and. He closed the gap on that pretty quickly. And now he has another 1,000 to go.
Just another 1,000 to go.
999 to go.
Yeah, there you go. 999 to go. It's ridiculous how people react to some of these things. Because
how so?
I immediately got text messages from people saying, oh, well, that wasn't a hit. I'm like, what about it wasn't a hit? The guy hit the ball at 109 off the bat.
Dude literally dove for it.
Yes.
Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
I just think
just enjoy it, people.
They're haters. I think that's what it is that they are actually haters. That,
is this how, that what it's miserable. Like to deal with me? Tony couldn't answer. He gave me the look into the camera on YouTube. If you want to watch us on YouTube, just search 97.3 The Fan and click the live button.
Yeah, no, that's stupid. That was a hit. That was a hit 1,000 out of 1,000 times. Unless
yes.
He dives and makes the play and throws him out at first. That's the only way it's not a hit at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's silly. Nonetheless, Padres struggled again with runners in scoring position. Did not get a hit in that spot. Had opportunities. That game was in their grasp. They had a chance. But unfortunately came up a little bit short. We await to see a couple things today. See the lineup. Obviously, that's to come. But I think the next thing, that at least that I'm wanting to hear, is how you is feeling today. After
yes.
His first start back in 2025, goes 3 2/3. Obviously, some rust after looking quite sharp in the first inning. And so, you know, I think that's where we're at. I think... You know, when you're just kind of reading tea leaves, he posted about it on IG.
Yes.
That would tend to make me believe that he's feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, the next day he was very touched by the support that the city put together and the ovation he got. And so, you know, that's anecdotal. That's not real proof of anything. But I know if I woke up the next day and my arm was hurting. I don't know if I want to be sending out a thank you IG message. That's just
no, I get it. I get it. He said, I don't know when he said this, but he did say, quote, I was a little bit worried about throwing the slider. It's a little bit stress on the elbow area, and just to be able to throw that pitch without any issues, I think that was the positive part of about today. So if he went into it, apparently, feeling a little bit nervous about the slider, and then he was able to get...
And he threw that... He threw that as much as he threw the sweeper. Looking at his pitch breakdown here,
14 curveballs, 12 sweepers, 12 sliders.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I have. And so, all in all, that's pretty good. Actually, they revised it. He actually threw 14 sliders, 14 curveballs, 11 sweepers when it was all said and done. And so he threw that the most, and he was. And if it truly he was worried about it, that's another good sign. He would have stopped throwing it if it wasn't feeling right.
Yeah. When he came out and his first inning was just great. Like, he was on point. And then I was like, uh-oh, here comes the rust in the second inning. But
I think it was, part of it was he was so sharp in that first, nobody got on. And then he got from the stretch, and all of a sudden timing's a little different. You got an actual runner you're worried about. And it took him a little bit to find the rhythm there. But all in all, it was just good to see him back on the bump.
Yeah, it was. And I think the umpire helped with his early exit a little bit, because there was a few calls that did not go Yu's way. And I know that that is a thing and that's a part of baseball, but some of these calls were close enough that they could have been strikes, and some of those strikes would have changed the game.
I haven't seen Junior's scorecard.
The umpire scorecard?
Yet. I haven't seen it yet.
Let me go look and see what the umpire scorecard
says. He was super tight. Like, he probably had... I would guess he had more strikes called balls than the other way around.
He called 159 of 169 taken pitches correctly.
That's pretty good. That's really good, actually.
He said it was relative accuracy 1.3%, but I was watching the game. It doesn't seem like it.
I hate to tell everybody this. TV isn't accurate all the time with how they have that box.
That's true. That
you know
is
what
true.
I'm saying? They just kind of slap it on there. It's in a relative close proximity, but it's not the exact one that they're being graded off of.
And the top three most impactful missed calls according to umpire scorecards. The first one, bottom of the ninth, Ginkle to Tatis, 3-2 count strike is called a ball. Top of the second, Darvish to Naylor, 2-2 count strike is called a ball. Bottom of the first, Gallen to Tatis, 2-0 count ball is called a strike. So... the umpire scorecard is making this look a little bit better than I thought it was going to be, but definitely thought.
That's the thing is when we're watching the game, the context is the actual game behind it, right? Like, who's winning, who's losing. That all plays into what we're looking at and how we're looking at it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He wasn't perfect, but he wasn't bad. Six of 117 called strikes were true strikes. So that means he
called balls were true strikes.
Called balls were true strikes. I told you, he probably called more balls that were actual strikes than he did strikes that were actually balls.
Yeah, I think, you can't really blame the umpire. But it could have changed things, a little bit.
Then you have to look at the misses, too. Like, those misses are like... I don't know if you can see his scorecard. They're like right on. They're like, they're not missing less than an inch.
Yeah,
less than an inch.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I guess in the moment I'm more of a get on.
I'm the same way. I'm watching the same game you are. I'm doing the same exact thing. So
here's the thing. Here's the thing, Tony, that really bothers me about last night.
What bothers you about last night?
The snakes came in. Snakes came in, having lost 8 of 11. Like, I know that the Diamondbacks are a good team. I know their offense is really good and one of the better ones in baseball. But I don't understand why the Diamondbacks give the Padres such a hard time, especially when they go through these stretches of losing and losing and losing.
It's a pretty even matchup. I know we hate to hear that, but it is. For whatever reason, they match up with us well. That's why it's kind of a back and forth in terms. And their offense, as you said, is really good. And that was without Marte in it last night. And so, I don't know. This is a team that's on the cusp. They could, they might be shipping some people off. But they also are in a spot where if they can win some, they might not do anything. So
here's another thing that annoys me. I'm sorry. I need to get this off my chest.
Go ahead.
When a guy like Zach Gallen, who I know is a good pitcher and has done great things, and
not
when
just
he
a good pitcher, a great pitcher,
I said great pitcher, that or I said great things,
Yeah, you say great things. That is having a bad year.
He is having a bad year, but all of a sudden he finds it. Like, that bothers me.
Did you watch his last start?
He struck out 10. I know that.
No, against us.
Oh, no. I did. He didn't have a great game.
No, well, he had his first 4 or 5 innings. Looked exactly like the 6 he threw yesterday, except the fifth inning got away from him. That's when the Padres ended up getting him out of that game. He pitched very similar. He just didn't finish it in the first start. That was as good as he's thrown the ball all year. You know, and it's not an excuse because I thought the Padres still let the Diamondbacks off the hook, you know, in that game, chasing, you know, out of the zone. And, you know, I'm going to keep referencing this. I'm going to keep saying this and preferencing by saying that I know it's easier said than done, but this group has already showed us that they can do it. So it's not like they're being asked to do something that they can't do. They just showed it the night before in that ESPN game. And so, you know, I think sometimes you get in those moments, especially late in the ball game, you know you got to have it. You got to find a way to slow it down. I mean, Diaz chases ball 4. Who was it? The at bat before that might have been the same thing. You know, Trenton pops up.
Yep.
Doesn't get anything done there. And those are huge spots in that inning. That's in April, those somehow turn into runs, multiple runs there. Instead, they get nothing. And, you know, you're only going to get so many of those opportunities. What would we say they were yesterday? 0 for 8?
0 for a million, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. There we are. We're off to the races. Scraby and myself, let's get to break on the other side. May need to have a conversation about Jackson Merrill a little bit. Yesterday might have been the first time I seen an at-bat from him like that, and I'll explain it on the other side. More Gwen and Chris. Kicking it with you to about 5:40. Did I get it right this time?
Yes, sir.
Took 5 out. 5:40. Sam Levitt.
Technically 5:35, but that's when 5:40.
Okay, come on, figure it out, man. Which one is it?
It's for us 5:35, but we'll say 5:40.
Taking you up to the 5:40 pregame show, Sam Levitt on the ones and twos. I'm sure he'll have a great show for you lined up. We're talking a little Padre baseball here. Jackson Merrill, in particular, yesterday back. In that two hole, 0 for 5, 3 punchies, and a little bit of a, I don't want to say slump. He's in a little bit of a rut right now. You know, baseball players are very sensitive about the word slump. I respect it.
And so, is that right?
yes. No one likes to hear those words. They, you know, it's a mental thing. You can't succumb to it. You can tell yourself you suck, but you're not in a slump.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. So when I go to the clubhouse, I'll be like, hey, Jackson, what's been your mindset throughout this slump? And then someone just like tackles me and punches me because I said it.
If you get beat up, it's on you at that point.
Okay.
You know, you've been more.
All right.
It's been a tale of two seasons for Jackson. He started the year hot. He was hitting like .467 with a .767 slug through the first 15 games. Of the year. But since then, Merrill is batting .199, a .277 slugging percentage across 43 games amid such a rough slump. Victor Rodriguez was quoted as saying he really kind of revealed how they're going to try to get him back on track. And he's quoted as saying, how can we get him back is reminding him of the things he does. You know, the work, the routine, the commitment to the work, to getting back to using the whole field, swinging at good pitches. The main thing is swinging at good pitches, Rodriguez continued. When he struggles, the effort level goes up, and you start searching and swinging at bad pitches. That's what you're seeing more than anything. And that was on display in the third at bat. Kind of saw it coming, right? The first couple of bats, it was really a setup, right? First at bat, he went high heater, high heater, high heater, high heater, all fastballs. I don't think one was a strike. Jackson swung at all of them. He fouled off one, The next AB, he threw him, I think it was three straight curveballs, if I'm not mistaken. It was all curveballs below the zone. And I told Jesse after the second at bat, I was like, oh, I can see why that worked, right? Because prior to not just the first at bat, but really over the last couple of weeks, more than a couple of weeks, that's been the main thing that has troubled Jackson is he's chased the ball up out of the zone. So he strikes out the first at bat on all heaters up at the top, and then he strikes out the second at bat, all breaking balls. And so it was an easy look for Zach Gallen there because he knows that he's got the kind of curveball that he's starting like maybe belly button high. So it's like, oh, Jackson in his mind is like, oh, finally, a pitch not up in the zone. I'm going to be able to get to this. And the bottom's falling out. He does it three straight, strikes out. Now the third at bat comes, and this is where I was like, oh, man, he's domed up on this one because because he started him with a high fastball. You know what? I'm going to pull it up.
I got it right here.
Started him with a high heater.
No, he started him with a sinker at the bottom.
Sinker at the bottom.
And then he went high heater.
And then he went then he went fastball right down the middle, right?
No, it was three pitches. He went sinker at the bottom, fastball at the top, and then sinker in the same spot the first strike was.
Right. So he's Scraby saying the bottom, it wasn't the bottom. It was bottom, but it was like middle. It wasn't like corner. It was like middle of the plate.
Yeah.
And that's how you know, like, in his mind, Jackson's thinking, all right, I'm struggling chasing high. He just punched me out, though, with three heaters or three breaking balls below the zone. And so he gets in there and he gets a first pitch sinker. In his mind, he's like, all right, I got it. Not chasing. So he gets the first strike. Now you're down 0-1. And you can kind of, this is how it goes when you're struggling. You always feel like you're behind. You're never in, like, aggressive counts. Then he goes to the high heater. And I think it was like a half swing. It wasn't even a full swing. Jackson.
And he looked very annoyed with himself.
And he looked annoyed. And then he came right back with basically it was like a fastball. It was supposed to be down and away. It ended up like middle and down. And he didn't even get a swing off. And that's when you know the wheels are just spinning up there. And that's not a healthy place to be as a hitter. You want to be free of thought. You want to have at best, like best case scenario, one thought. You might sometimes be able to get away with two, but multiple thoughts are already a problem. So if you can imagine if you have more than just two thoughts while you're in that box trying to decipher all of that, you get a malfunction there where you like can't pull the trigger.
I mean, I can't say I understand, but I kind of understand. It's not a good place to be. And when things snowball on me in the studio, things just get worse and worse and worse.
I think the thing that there's a couple things. I think his swing itself is fine, so that's not something he needs to worry about. It's more about kind of resetting the head, like removing all the clutter. He is making a mechanical move that he's trying to fix right now. But you know, what's interesting is I was talking to Victor 2 days ago, or it might have been yesterday, about kind of the same thing, and he mentioned that that's kind of how his approach has been with Toddy. Like, there are certain guys that you can talk mechanics to and like are really into that, and that's what helps them work through the process. Then there are other guys that you can't talk mechanics with. That only clutters the mind for them, and sometimes those guys just need to be this might sound crazy because we're talking about like the best baseball players in the world that are been paid millions and millions of dollars. Sometimes they just need to be reminded of who they are, like how good they are and what they do when they're good, when they're going well.
I mean, it's hard, it's easy to forget that when you're in the middle of a slide and you're feeling like you are not good whatsoever.
That's been his approach here recently with Toddy, is really just kind of reminding him, hey man, like there's a reason why, you know, these folks want to see you in an all-star game. That was picked by his peers, not the fans in this case. So, like, you're a dude that is a dude. So, you know, the confidence wanes, and I think sometimes when you're looking at body language and things of that, that's what's going on. Is they're not a very confident individual in that moment. And I know we only see them as, you know, what their last name is and, you know, what, you know, with the uniform on. But when you're not playing well, confidence goes away quickly. And that's like with the very, very best in this league at times. And so sometimes that's got to be one of the ways you attack it. And I think Jackson is a very confident dude. You know, I'm not saying that he hasn't lost confidence, but I'm confident that he can get it fixed, and he'll get it fixed quickly. He typically does. This is really the first time I can remember him having this long of a period of time where he's not swinging the bat well. It's only brought him where basically his numbers were last year here when it ended. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm confident he'll get it going. But he's definitely in a little bit of a rut, and you hate to see it now because it does feel like the pieces around him are starting to swing it better, right? You got Toddy starting to swing it better.
You got Manny doing his
Manny's
thing.
Manny's been swinging it good. Ariza is swinging it well. Gavin swing. And so you like to have some continuity. Bogey and Crone are starting to swing the bats better. And so, you know, maybe there's a move there where you kind of move him back into where the spot he was last year.
Okay, here's where I wanted to go with this. Why not switch Jake Cronenworth with Jackson Merrill? Because Jake is hitting well, and you're still getting your right, left, so you're not messing up that order at the top. And then give him a little bit of a breather. How much does moving down in the lineup actually give a guy a breather?
I don't know. What I will say is you're finally getting Crone to swing the bat well. Do you want to move him out of that spot? I mean,
that's a good point.
The other point is you've been dying for production towards the bottom
True.
Of the lineup anyway.
So you want to put the guy who's slumping at the bottom of the lineup,
right? Like that, and that's why you know it presents a little bit of a conundrum. Now I'm looking out on the field now. Who do I see out for some early work?
Jackson Merrill,
Gavin Sheets, about to do I don't know, like a velocity machine maybe. I'm not sure, but I'll just show you real quick in the camera.
Oh, okay.
Who are watching. When you watch him at the plate, you know, he's got that nice little crowd. The first move, once he gets to the ready position, like his hands are back, his foot, he's ready to go, his first move right now is this.
Lifting up with the shoulder.
He wants to come out, as opposed to just staying there and going whack. Remember I was telling you, where are they pitching him at?
Down.
No. Where has he been chasing most?
Oh, up.
Up. So that's where that's coming from.
Ah.
They're seeing so much of it up there that – because he's been chasing, he's not making this off of pitches that have been in the zone. It's on pitches that have been out of the zone. So he's having to do this, or he thinks he's having to do this to get to the baseball, and all it's doing is just slowing his bat down, having him a little bit longer, and he can't get to it. So,
it's kind of like golf a little bit in that way. Where
there's so many correlations
between the baseball swing and the golf swing.
Baseball swing,
because when you're trying not to slice it, you need to keep your shoulder down and get through, but you don't because you're trying to protect against this. I get what you're saying, but it's like similar in that way. Like you're lifting
that
to
move,
try and make it there.
You're trying to generate as
yes.
opposed to just taking the swing.
Yeah.
Right.
And swinging through the zone, and that makes sense a lot, actually.
So I'm sure that's what they'll be attacking here today. All right, let's get to break. What we got when we come back?
Oh, we're going to go out to Arizona and talk with Nick Pecoro of the Arizona Republic about these Diamondbacks.
Pecoro's coming on back. We had Nick on a little bit earlier in the year. He'll come back and join us here shortly. More Gwen and Chris on the other side. All right, it's definitely not 8:35.
What inning is the Padres game in right now?
It's 2:35. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby. Not often does this happen. We were literally just having this conversation as my cameraman, a.k.a. my laptop, just kind of fixed a shot there. We were talking about lineups, and I was just saying how, you know, you might have to move Jackson out of that spot because, you know, you guys around him are starting to swing the bat better.
Oh, wait, hold on. I have something for this.
What do you know? The lineup. And we have a change.
Wow.
And this looks a lot like it looked at the very beginning. We all wanted a change at that point. But here it is. Tatis, arise. hitting second. Manny Machado third. Gavin Sheets in the cleanup spot. Jackson Merrill back into that five spot. Xander Bogaerts, Jake Cronenworth, Trent Brooks, Elias Diaz behind the dish.
All right.
So there you have it.
I'm happy with this. Just to see how it works. I mean, I don't want Jackson to get dropped because he's bad or in a rut, but this could help.
I think so. You get some continuity. Jake remains down at the bottom portion to continue to hopefully provide some offense down there. Before we get to our guest today, Nick Picoro, Arizona Republic. Diamondbacks are one of those teams that certainly, as we said, they lose three or four, they could be shipping everybody out. They win three or four, they might feel differently about their opportunity. But we'll get a chance to talk to Nick a little bit about that. But interesting. I don't know that it's all that interesting. You could almost say you anticipated it a little bit, given that the pieces around, it was different when everybody was kind of trying to figure out their way or there were just one or two guys swinging it. But there's some guys who, you know, seem to be trending upwards right now in the lineup.
They are. And Gavin Sheets I like in the cleanup spot. What do you think, Tony? Is Gavin Sheets, has he played good enough left field for the Padres to not make that a priority at the trade deadline?
I think he's played a good left field while he's been out there. I don't know that you don't look for another outfield.
Like, if you could find it, you go for it.
For sure. I think you definitely like versatility, and he's shown that he has some little versatility, right? He could play first. He could play some outfield. He could be the designated hitter. But if you can get I think it's, as we talked about yesterday, listening to AJ Preller, that's as straightforward as we've ever heard AJ speak in terms of answering questions about the deadline and what they may try to go after. It sounded pretty firm, and we're going to try to go out and get a bat or two to kind of lengthen out the lineup. All right, let's hop on the phone lines. We have our guest on the line, Nick Picoro, Arizona Republic. Nick, how are you, my friend?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming back on again. Diamondbacks get the first win of this four-game set, 6-3. Gallen probably pitches one of his best performances of the year, and the Diamondbacks are in a sticky situation here. I mean, they're about .500, just a game below .500, going in to this last week before the break. Could this week be the deciding, you know, factor in whether this is a sell or a team that's looking to maybe add pieces?
I mean, I guess. It's just hard to imagine them adding at this point. It's just so much has gone wrong. And then you saw yesterday Shelby Miller goes on the injured list. You know, they're just like, you know, 100 games into the season almost and just haven't been able to, you know, maintain any sort of, you know, that they haven't gone on any sort of a hot streak. They just haven't really given you much reason to believe. Now, look, I mean, I heard a team that won 84 games and went to the World Series. So, you know, anything's possible and teams can catch fire and have things go right for them. And maybe that happens here these next few weeks. I just saying, you know, based on what we've seen, you know, the first 3 months of the season, there's just not really much reason to believe that's about to happen.
All right, so let me reshape the question then. Okay,
let's
remove the adding pieces. Is there a scenario in which they don't do anything? They keep everybody, including these inspiring contracts, or do you only see the scenario in which, at the very least, they're going to move somebody off of this roster?
I would guess that they do take some guys off for a few reasons. You know, they're spending a lot on this team, and you know, if it's not going to be a postseason team, you maybe want to save some money and maybe put that toward next year's team. And then also there's some there's some holes on this club when you look to next year, especially when you look at, like, you know, Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen are free agents. Corbin Burns isn't going to be back till the second half at the earliest, right? Probably August or September. So you got a lot of innings you're going to have to fill in that rotation. And if you think that Naylor or Suarez or Gallen or Kelly can get you back, you know, a guy that can be a depth piece even in the rotation, I feel like you probably got to think about it. They could play well enough to put them in a really tricky spot and just be like, all right, fine, let's just keep it together. Let's just go with what we got. But I don't know, man. I mean, you kind of feel like you got to go one way or the other, because as constructed, as I've said, like, it's hard to see this team being good enough without, especially adding to the bullpen. There's just so many. They've just taken on so much water in that area. Even in the last week, like, you know, Thompson and now Miller going on the injured list, and, you know, they're already without Puck and Martinez, and Ginkle hasn't really been right all year. There's just so many issues. So I guess I would lean toward them going one way or the other.
We're talking to Nick Picoro of the Arizona Republic here on 97.3 The Fan, Gwen and Chris. And I want to know about the owner, because the owner has the ultimate authority to spend money and to make trade or to okay trades and things like that. How invested in is he in this team winning? Because we've heard in the last couple of years, he's saying that, hey, we can move out of Arizona if we don't get a new stadium type of thing. Is he committed to making this team a winner?
I think so. I mean, look, like he went out and just kind of surprised everybody by greenlighting the Corbin Burns signing. I don't think anybody saw this team going into a, you know, 2025 with a payroll around $200 million. So I think you look back historically, like when he's sensed a chance to win, he's gone and spent money. Now, he's also been quick to kind of pull the ripcord, in the past on some of those seasons where it's kind of gone sideways, and he's been pretty willing to sell to try to get back some of that money. And I feel like too, you know, you start looking at a team that's just kind of a middling club. Like, you know, what's that going to mean to those attendance projections that they had? Are they going to end up coming in under? Is it going to make more sense to you know, again, just try to save whatever you can? They just got their financing for the stadium in place. Like, they're not going anywhere. I do think he wants to win, but I kind of feel like, you know, the reasonable way to look at this team is it's probably not going to happen this year, at least as we sit here today. Maybe that changes in a few weeks.
Nick Picoro joins us here, Arizona Republican. Nick, you know, what does all of this mean for a guy like Torey Lovullo? I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I thought they extended him not that long ago. What does it mean for the staff and you know, everybody else for a team that I think by many people's regards is underachieving right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, Mike Hazen stuck with Torey Lovullo through that 110 loss season in 2021. My sense of it with Hazen is that Torey would have to, like, really lose the room, you know, like, guys would have to just stop playing for him. Like, something would have to go really wrong. And I think a big part of it is that Hazen would sort of see firing the manager as like passing the buck, you know, like I think he takes responsibility. He that's the way he seems to view it. Like, this is my fault that this team hasn't gotten going. I didn't do enough with this roster, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that I haven't gotten any indications from anybody in the organization that they're really thinking seriously about it. Like, you know, I haven't asked about it every day, so, you know, that can change, of course. But I think they view, you know, Torey as a pretty good manager, like a guy that guys play hard for. You know, he has the trust of the players in the room. You know, does he make every right pitching change, you know, every strategic decision go right? No, but, like, you know, it's baseball, it's hard. And I think they view that, you know, the stuff that he does outweighs the those negatives, those mistakes.
Talking to Nick Picoro, Arizona Republic here, 97.3 The Fan. Sticking with Torey Lovullo, because I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, Ketel Marte was heckled by a fan, and it really upset him, and Torrey Lovello turned around and got right in that fan's face. Is that just a sign of who Torrey Lovello is as a person? And does that translate to everyone in the clubhouse loving playing for him because he's willing to put his neck out there for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's a guy that just cares about his players on like a personal level. He gets to know them, tries to spend time with them and connect with them. And I think it's kind of reciprocated. I think they know that Torrey has their back and they want to go out there and do everything they can to, you know, to help him win a game. And you know, you've seen it over the years, right? I mean, it's not always like that. Like guys don't always feel that way about their manager. I think the players genuinely like Torrey. I think they genuinely respect him. And I think they want to play hard for him and win for him.
Nick, last one for me. I mean, you know, you talked about Corbin Burnes and you mentioned ownership kind of green lighting that deal. He's an Arizona guy. I mean, what, and I know he's going to be missed for the rest of the year, but what kind of impact had he been kind of having on the staff and those guys around there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, when he went down, I think things weren't going great. The rotation was struggling. I mean, obviously, you put a guy like that in there that every 5 days you know what you're going to get. And it just kind of bumps everybody down a roll, and it's just, you know, you're going to get six, seven innings. It was super valuable to have. But I don't know. It's a hard one to answer because, like, you know, so many guys were not going good at the time that he went down. So I don't know if he was, if there was a ton I could point to that was like, yeah, that guy benefited this way or whatever. I do think that everybody respects the way that he works and just the kind of commitment that he has to like a routine and a process. It's well known that the guy's like so, or, you know, routine oriented and just so, like, you know where he's going to be, you know, 2 days after his start at 3 p.m. Like he just has it all down to the minute, everything between, you know, in those 5 days. So everybody, I think took something from that. But man, they're going to miss him. They're going to miss him next year. It's a huge loss. Kind of just the way they had sort of planned everything going forward, knowing that Gallen and Kelly were coming off potentially. It has a chance to just kind of wreck, you know, two different seasons for these guys. It's tough.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's a reminder that, you know, despite how much money you sign for, you come in, health is a big deal. If you could stay healthy, you can start to kind of plant some of those things. Nick, as always, man, appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us.
No problem, guys. Take care. Thanks again.
Thank you. Nick Picoro joining us there, Arizona Republic. Let that serve as a reminder, right? You know, you could hear the hesitation in Nick's voice as I asked him that question. And that's how it is really across the board in all professional sports. You can be a dude that's done something elsewhere and get paid, come to this spot. All eyeballs are still going to be on you in terms of, like, all right, what are you going to do? You know, these are new teammates. They're all, I'm sure, want to follow your lead. And as you said, it sounds like there's a great deal of respect for the way he goes about the work. But, you know,
it didn't sound like he was helping out much.
That's just one part of it, right?
Yeah,
the other element is the performance part, which is which you have been able to make a name off of. And in his first year, as we often see, he is not the only one. We watched pretty much every guy coming in the first year of a deal after signing it. Nowadays, seems like they struggle in that first year.
They do.
And it's across the board. Position player, pitcher, big name, medium name, whatever. The human nature is, I'm going to show you guys I earned this. And then you go out and you try to show everybody, and it goes the exact opposite way almost every time.
I know that he probably just had Tommy John surgery with Corbin Burnes, but when you asked him, how is he doing around the club? He was like, I mean, how much does a guy actually stick around a team after they're injured?
That will, you know, that's...
And they're in Arizona, so there's no excuse.
I'm sure that's going to be something that is the jury's still out on, right? I mean, Will he be around? You know, because that kind of stuff gets talked about. Like, you know, maybe not to his face, but certainly it's talked about. If you're not around and you, like, just disappear and you're on your own program, that will be noted. There's no doubt. I'm not saying that he is doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that guys pay attention to that kind of stuff. Because it takes a special type of person. I mean, someone of that stature to say, you know what, I'm just going to be around my teammates even though I can't offer them anything physically right now. I still want them to know that I'm in this foxhole with them. You know what I'm saying? And I think those are how you kind of plant some of those roots when you come to a new team. You do things like that. Like, you get her. I mean, Joe Musgrove's here every day.
Yeah.
Hasn't been able to pitch all year. And I know some days he's real, but some days he's not doing anything.
He's here.
But he's here every day. He's been on the road. I've
yeah.
watched the dude on the plane. The kind of stuff matters. I'm not saying you got to be at every single game, every single road trip. I don't think that's what your teammates are requiring. But I do think it goes noticed when you aren't there often.
I definitely think it goes noticed. I would be one that notices. Like, where's this dude at?
I have a feeling I know that you would be one of those teammates
like,
that noticed.
This dude,
I got to be here. Why isn't
yeah,
he here?
This dude gets the bag, and I got to be here, but he's not here? Come on. He's getting paid just the same as I am, and I'm playing over here. I would be angry about it. I would.
You find a way to make it about that all the time.
I know. You're going to say no. But maybe this is a Corbin Burns thing. We've heard right. his displeasure in Milwaukee. It didn't go well in Baltimore, and now in Arizona.
I don't know that it didn't go well. They got to the playoffs.
I don't think they won a game in the playoffs.
They did,
and that's not his fault, but
that's not his fault.
I understand why he was angry at the Brewers, because the Brewers seem like that team that's going to take everything that they told you back in that meeting.
He chose to go. I know that someone in his circle said, hey, man, it's probably not a good idea to go. They're going to do this and this and this.
And then he was like,
I'm sure somebody said that to him. Every agent says that. Like, I don't think it's a good idea that you go. Because they know most of their clients can't handle hearing that kind of stuff.
I know I wouldn't be able to hear that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Like, we know you try really hard, but you really stink at trivia questions during Christmas to fans. Yeah. At the end of the day, you net zero, okay? That would be fun.
I mean, that'd be tough for anybody's ego to...
Of course. Of course. Especially with the money that they're talking about, because he feels like he should be being paid this much versus the guy who got this much and... all of that.
That's why, I mean, as much as it irritated Padre fans, I couldn't be mad at Hader. Like, he literally got jobbed.
Yeah.
for trying to be a team player. Like, oh, yeah, I'll pitch in the 7th, 8th, and 9th. I'll do it all. Whatever you guys need from me. And then they went into that arbitration was like, yeah, man, you're not a closer. We have you throwing in the 7th and 8th this special many times. That doesn't sound like a closer to us.
Wait a minute, I
was trying to do this for the team.
If I was fly on the wall.
Man. And so you could see why somebody would be furious about that.
But you know what? You've told me something, Tony. If a girl treats me bad on a date, I can't carry that to the next date.
No,
to
you
the
can't.
Next girl. Because they're different girls. And
you
so Josh Hader should have come to San Diego.
Now, in this situation, the system is everybody. It's all the teams. It's not just... you know, in that case, the Brewers.
I thought
it
had a really good comparison there.
It's like, yeah, it was a good attempt, though. You almost got me there.
Almost.
All right, let's get to break. Daily Gambit on the way. Hopefully, we got a whole lot better bets than we did yesterday. I knew I didn't feel good about none of those Darvish bets because we didn't know enough information.
Okay.
It went the wrong way real quick. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.